This is Rosalinda with Community to Community Development, having a conversation again on our radio show at KMRE. Our radio show is called Community Voice, and that is Community Voice. It's a bilingual name, and we're really happy to be able to have this radio show, which is a local community radio show in Bellingham. We appreciate every chance that we get to get our voices out there and to let people know who we are. So I'm going to talk with you a little bit about Community to Community. We are an organization that has been in Bellingham for 14 years now. Next year, we're going to be celebrating our 15th anniversary. So it's quite a while. I mean, 15 years is a while. I can't believe that 14 years has already gone by. We are located in the Clover Building in downtown Bellingham on Holly Street between Commercial and Bay Street. So we've been there since 2003, and I actually rented the space in 2002 and began occupying it in 2003. And in 2004, we gathered there with a group of women organizers and community leaders to discuss the creation of a women-led organization, which was quite a discussion that we had. So what you should all know is that Community to Community Development is a women-led organization. And I always like to say that it is intentionally women-led. And it was a discussion that we had, all of us together, about the fact that very rarely do you see women-led organizations actually leading as women. And you may say, well, you know, there's a lot of women leadership, but I think that the question at Community to Community has always been, what does it mean to lead as women? And then more intentionally, what does it mean to lead as women of color in a community that is over 80%, I believe 88 or 89% white? And what does that mean for us as an organization when we're going to go out and organize and seek support and try to create a better world for people of color? So it's been an interesting 14 years. We are people of color led, and in specifically women of color led. So our radio show is going to reflect the work that we're doing. We will be having radio shows reflecting the actions and the positions that we're taking and why we're taking those positions. We're excited, and we look forward to having music. We want to try to be as, I guess you could say, friendly to as many people as possible. So don't be surprised if at some point somebody comes in and reads a poem related to the work that we're doing, or there's music being played related to the work we are doing. You will hear from impacted community members. You will hear from the organizers themselves, and also from, we'll hopefully do interviews with people that we are learning from. We have a lot of visitors now from all over the world, actually, that come to meet with us and to look at our projects, how we develop our projects, to meet with our constituents, which are. It's interesting, I think, for people to know that are going to be listening to our show, that our main constituency is the farm worker community, farm worker families in Whatcom and Skagit counties, low-income Latino working families, immigrant families, both documented and undocumented. We work a lot with youth and indigenous communities from the tribal communities of Swinomish, Lummi, and Nooksack. We are in solidarity with other movements that are moving in the same direction that we are. So I welcome everybody to listen to us. There will be a schedule that will be posted soon. But we, you know, I'm not always going to be on the radio show. We will be sharing the space here among us. We will be rotating the hosting of the radio show. And the hosts of the radio show, depending on the work that we are doing, will either be Edgar Franks, Junga Subedar, Maru Mora Villalpando, Michelle Vendiola, possibly Michael Vendiola, Josefina Mora, and other folks. Brenda Bentley might join us as a host, because she's going to be working a lot with art and culture and artists. So it's going to be a show that will not be boring. Our show will be interesting, challenging in some ways, provocative in other ways. Not that we want to be provocative, not that we think we're provocative, but some folks see us as provocative. And that's just the nature of the work that we do when it comes to meeting our goal and our purpose. This is Rosalinda Guillen with Community to Community Development, and I would like to, at this moment, read to you our statement of purpose so that you know, when you listen to our radio show, this is what we're about. That we, as women of color in a women-led, an intentionally women-led organization, strive to reclaim our humanity by redefining power in order to end settler colonialism, capitalism, and patriarchy in their external and internalized forms. We are working towards a goal in 2020 of being a self-governing solidarity economy center, fostering political movements, defining their own agenda towards the creation of local solidarity economies. And again, when we say self-governing, we also mean self-sustaining. So we welcome the support of the community towards walking with us in on this road towards striving to reclaim our humanity. And we have many partners and folks that have been working with us for 14 years developing this vision. I would like to also let our folks know that our partners in fundraising and working on issues are, first of all, Food First, who is our fiscal sponsor. Food First was founded in the 70s and is a great organization working on food sovereignty, and they write amazing background papers and have a global reach because they have done such amazing work. Some of the background papers that they do, I'm looking at one right now called The Capitalism in Our Food. And it's an amazing backgrounder, and we are a big fan of Food First, and I'm proud to say that they are our fan, and they support the work that Community to Community does, and we work together on a large scale to, again, try to magnify and reach out our work, put our work out so that people know what we're doing, because we're not always covered by the media or other media sources. So we're glad that we're able to have a voice at KMRE, but organizations like Food First and also Why Hunger and the U.S. Food Sovereignty Alliance, and those are the types of organizations that have a global reach and definitely a national reach that help us to promote our work that we're doing here in Whatcom and Skagit County and across Washington State. We're also just developed a partnership with the Institute for Washington's Future, which is based here in Bellingham, and we're looking to see where that's going to go, but they are also a fiscal sponsor for Community to Community Development. So welcome to our radio show. Please tune us in. There will be a schedule given out soon. And that's who we are, and you'll be hearing from a lot of us. It's a large group. And we welcome your participation in all of our events, which we will be announcing on the radio show. Thank you for listening. Hello, everybody. This is Rosalinda with Community to Community Development, welcoming you to our radio show. Yes, C2C has a radio show. It's called Community Voice. And I'm really excited today because I want to welcome Michelle Vendiola, one of our key leaders at C2C. She sits on our strategic thinking table and our ecofeminist leadership group. As you know, Community to Community is led by women, but it's not every woman in the world. It's women of color. It's women that are taking some very specific actions to change the world to a better place. in Whatcom County and beyond. So I want to welcome Michelle today because she has some very exciting updates for us. She just got back from Brazil. Yes, and that's Rio in Brazil, someplace that everybody wants to go. But she didn't go there on vacation. She went there as part of her mission and the work that she's doing as an Indigenous woman. So I'm just going to have Michelle tell us a little bit about that. And I want to say first that I'm very proud that she was in Brazil with many movements representing community to community and Red Line, Salish, and the work that we're doing here. So first of all, thank you, Michelle, for going on our behalf and for representing all of us women doing this work. And I know that you just got back, so you're probably still a little bit jet-lagged, but let's tell us, how was it?
Hi, Rosalinda. Yes, I had an amazing experience, and yeah, thank you for inviting me to the radio show. I did come back with a little bit of a cold, but all in all, it was super, super exciting in the fact that it's changing the way that I see movement building. And I'm just amazed at the fact that the people in Rio, in Brazil, are so politicized in the way that they view how social issues and movements can, how they come together to make a change in massive numbers. And that was inspiring because I think that's something our community and our country should be doing to combat the types of oppression that we're seeing here.
Who were some of the people that went to this gathering? Michelle, it was fairly large, wasn't it?
Yeah, we were part of a delegation, an international delegation from the United States, and we were part of a C2C as a member of a group in that's part of, we're called the Climate Justice Alliance and the Global
Grassroots Global Justice.
So we went with them, and the international delegation was invited by MAB, and MAB is the Mobilization of Indigenous People or People of Brazil Against Dams. And dams and hydroelectricity, and that's how that impacts the people, especially the Indigenous people, the way that it's flooding communities, the water it's taking to power mines, and so all the discussion around hydroelectricity and the actual displacement of people. So we were brought there and invited. I was invited by C2C, who's a member of that organization, and MAB hosted it. Indigenous people from all over Brazil are involved in that organization, as well as other folks who they call peasants and working class people. And then people as far as Africa and other countries like Europe and France were also in attendance.
That sounds really exciting. And having been in Brazil at these movement gatherings, I can only imagine how exciting it was. And I know that in Brazil, the indigenous people have organized themselves quite extensively. Mm-hmm. And the Climate Justice Alliance is a national alliance here in the United States. It's looking at the impacts of climate change. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, when you look at the title of the gathering, right, these gathering of people against dams, it's like, well, why are we going to go to that? You know, what does that mean? But I think that we're seeing even here in Washington State and other parts of the United States, the impact that the production of electricity has and how the need for electricity is growing and growing and the impact that it's had locally. Did you see any similar type of issues of indigenous people in the South with some of the issues, you know, building up here in the United States with indigenous peoples protecting their sovereign lands? Did you see any similarities or anything that you were able to talk about the indigenous people in the South about?
Yeah, I think the most powerful connection is that our North and South America are all struggling with corporations and the control of energy and how corporations are going into countries and trying to control the different power sources and energy sources across the globe, basically, which would include hydroelectricity through dams, coal, and other mining and oil. And so with that, people who are actually standing up to these corporations are in these countries murdered and killed, disappeared because of the type of resistance that's happening. But yet the people are still resisting. And I think that that's the kind of courage that I'm bringing back from this. And there's so much more. It's just amazing how people are strong enough to resist this kind of corporate control and genocide of people.
I think that at Community to Community, we've realized quite a while ago that our resistance and also our future into building a better world is inherently tied with other Indigenous peoples all over the world. And it's one of the reasons that we're members of national alliances like the Climate Justice Alliance and Grassroots Global Justice, the U.S. Food Sovereignty Alliance, mm-hmm. The Domestic Fair Trade Association. Mm-hmm. We work with these other groups, understanding that what happens in our little area in Whatcom County is actually a result of many oppressions that U.S.-based corporations are undertaking in other places. Mm-hmm. And as we speak today, Edgar, along with Dean Jackson from HUGS, a urban farming, black urban farming community in Tacoma, are actually in South Africa mm-hmm. meeting with South African farm workers and peasants, actually discussing some similar issues around the lack of or the South African peasants and farmers losing land mm-hmm. to corporations coming in and buying up land and using it for mining and energy production. So I think in Brazil, the same is happening.
Yep.
Did you hear of any particular U.S.-based banks or corporations that are doing this in Brazil and in the global South that we've also encountered here in the United States in our fights of resistance?
Yeah, it's all the same banks and all the same corporations. Exxon trying to drill off the coast of Brazil to extract the oil from the ground in the water. And just the same corporations and banks that are invested in the extraction of energy. So Brazil is trying to figure out their own energy model and what that looks like, what's fair for the country, what's fair for what kind of just transition to move to, because, you know, they realize that energy is needed and at the same time it's oppressing people. So trying to figure out what energy model is appropriate or going to happen is some of the discussion that happened there. I think that I found it really powerful to listen to, I guess, like testimony and debate from people from across the country, especially those that were from the more rural populations, the Indigenous women, and how their communities are more impacted because they're being infringed upon and entire communities have been decimated because the corporations are going in to remove them or outright, you know, assassinate people because they want the land for extracting for energy development.
And I think the extension of that in the United States is similar to what happened at Cherry Point, right? That These corporations know of a spot where they can extract for profit and will do just about anything to get it. Mm-hmm. And I think that in many cases that's where the struggles are similar. But I'm wondering, did you see a wider, bigger number of engagement of local community people engaging with similar discussion, I guess, and similar understanding, like a collective understanding of what that struggle was, who it was with, and how the struggle was going to be undertaken? Did you see or feel that there are more people involved in the areas that you were with in Brazil and other communities from other parts in the world than we have here locally?
Yes, two things there. One was you talked about the similarities here and there, and what I would say is that our struggle to maintain sovereignty in tribal nations, especially locally, like with Cherry Point and the tribe here, Lemmy Nation, has done a great job in protecting Cherry Point. But the struggle will continue with every political move from the United States to try to get at that piece of land to do some oil, to try to take it for oil exportation. And what I saw in relation to what we're doing here is just the tip of the iceberg. If our people continue to do resistance work against corporations, then I saw the future of what could happen here, future of what our people will be facing, it because the resistance has been happening there for so long. I saw what standing up to oil corporations could actually look like, because they're not benevolent. They will continue to fight people because they're not friends of people. They're out for money. And so what I see, what's common is that we're standing up, for our land, because we're seeing that settler colonialism is continuing here, and indigenous people are standing up to that. But oil corporations aren't going to have it, and they're going to keep pushing back, like in the instance of Red Line Sailor Sea, now receiving a lot of just persecution from local officials. And those local officials, like and the local and state officials, who are trying to criminalize what we're doing. And a lot of the activists in Brazil, one of the things they mentioned is that they've been criminalized, called terrorist. They don't get fair local or fair media attention. Media is criminalizing them. Everything sounds familiar of what's happening here. And so I'm really happy that a couple of them were able to do some interviews with me, and I'm looking forward to the opportunity to share those interviews in the future. And then you asked a question about the size of movements or something like that. And
just that if you saw more engagement from community in these struggles and in this resistance than you see here, more organized engagement than you see here?
Absolutely, unfortunately. And but I would say that, every day I notice more young people wanting to get engaged, and I'm very thankful for those who are being less fearful. But I really think that there's a lot of resistance because people feel like it's they're afraid to be judged, to go out there on the limb. But really, it's our lives, it's our future that we are thinking about, and it's a less selfish thing to do to speak out against this stuff. And it's less selfish, and we have to get critical, and we have to get brave. And so the movement's there. One of the things that was, I guess, made me feel like hopeful was there were people from all ages. There were like children, there were teenagers, there were, you know, elders, and they were all working for the same cause. I saw a group of kids who were, they had them separated into a daycare so their parents could participate. But the daycare wasn't just a daycare. They were learning chants. They were doing like their marches. They were building, they were painting banners. It was just a great thing for me to witness these young people, these little kids, like 4 and 5 and 6 and 7, doing these things. And I think that I always feel like when people say, oh, those kids are too young to talk about these things or these issues, I don't believe it. We have to start really young.
And I think that they're learning their history before, mm-hmm. you know, while they're still, while the history is happening.
Mm-hmm.
I saw the Dolores Huerta film has been showing here, and I think that was one of the things that was brought home to me in the 60s and the 50s and 70s when the farm worker movement was being formed, that everybody participated, mm-hmm. kids and whole families. And it's very similar to that. We don't do that anymore. We seem to compartmentalize things, right, to not disturb the comfort, even of our own children, so that, you know, they don't have to go to the picket line. That's something I do as an adult.
Mm-hmm.
And I very much agree with that. In Brazil, it's something that they do. It permeates everything that they do.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to ask you, Michelle, were there any politicians there or elected leaders or political parties represented in the movement? Did you notice any of that going on?
Yeah, there was. He was a former president of Brazil who was there. He was, sorry, I can't remember.
Was it Lula?
Lula.
Oh my gosh, Lula showed up
Lula
to you.
Lula was there.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm. And he was like, so powerful as a speaker, and everyone was just so excited to see him and just, you know, cheering and standing in ovation for him. So it was great to see the support that they gave Lula. It was quite a sight to see the people behind a president like that. So he was there, and he came to speak. And then they had a couple of other local politicians that supported the movement. And I think the difference is there's I'm not quite sure of what the terms are over there, but more of a liberal party and a very conservative party. And the liberal party has been removed. But that party is still very supportive of the people, and so those people who are supportive, they came to support the movement of the people in discussion and speaking.
So just a little bit of background for our listeners. The party I think that Michelle is talking about is the Workers' Party, and the Workers' Party was formed exactly by that, by workers, and it was a political party that was formed in the mid-70s during the dictatorship in Brazil. And Lula was chosen by worker leaders after the party gained a lot of political power through popular education methods, through political work around the solidarity economy and participatory democratic methods. Their party grew to a large number in the millions in Brazil. And they chose Lula, who was actually a union worker. I believe he was a miner. Anyway, he was a union worker, and they chose him to basically assigned him to run for president to try to change the entire country and move it into a progressive direction that mm-hmm. would have more equity and justice for workers. And it was quite successful. And I was there in 2001 when Lula was still a candidate. And so, of course, now currently, Lula has been criminalized. He's been, I think he might be going to prison for corruption, and all of the leaders from the Workers' Party. So there's been a shift, and you're right, the shift from the progressive Workers' Party's movement towards more the conservative corporate control, which a lot of that corporate control now is coming from the United States. Mm-hmm. There's a shift happening in Brazil around this, and I think it's really important that we acknowledge that when workers organize, these are the things that happen. Although they've had quite a few years of developing some pretty progressive, economically sustainable models for poor people and other governance measures of food sovereignty, land justice, and other issues. So I think the fact that Lula came to your gathering is pretty significant, mm-hmm. which means that the movements gathering there are some of the largest movements and more progressive movements.
Right.
So I congratulate you. I didn't know he was going to be there, and I think that was quite an exciting happening for everybody that was there listen to him.
People were super excited. At this gathering, there were over 3,000 people.
Yeah.
So it was amazing. And, you know, one of the things that they didn't know is our struggle here. There's no... the struggle here, America, I think the United States doesn't allow for our struggle to get out of this country, doesn't allow for the work, for the activist work, for the resistance work to reach other places. Like, the media isn't supportive of sharing our movements, of course. So we have to go through alternative media, like what we're doing now. Hopefully it can spread. But anyways, I was talking with people, and a lot of them didn't even know about the No Dapl movement. And they were surprised that we had indigenous people that were resisting oil pipelines. So just the fact that I was there and able to talk to people about resistance movements here changed a little bit of their perspective of what people in the United States are like.
That's so true. And I think that in Brazil, they have a different idea of us in the United States, that we're all comfortable, that we're all giving in to the corporate model and the capitalist model. And I think that's why these movements like, you know, the Climate Justice Alliance are important, where we can pool resources to be able to afford to go to other places. There's nothing better than having that face-to-face conversation with another activist, mm-hmm. to try to understand how corporations are controlling so much of our space, both political space, the land itself, the markets. You know, it's like a NAFTA where capital can move and come and go and be used wherever, but people, it's difficult for people to come together. So it was really important, I know, for us, the leadership of Community to Community, to have you go, mm-hmm. and see and feel these movements that are so vibrant and alive, mm-hmm. and so large, you know. And again, it's that vision of what we want to become, where we want to go as an organization, and movements. I had one other question. As you know, Rio was... There was all that controversy in Rio about the Olympics and also the favelas. Did you have a chance to go out and talk to any activists or see some of these incredibly poor areas of Rio that, you know, we do see in our news, right? All of the strife and conflict over the Olympics and all that. Did you hear or see any of that while you were gathering there with all of these movements?
We stayed in a mission that was right above, like a block away from one of the favelas. And so we had a lot of what would you say, like just advice to not walk too far into mm-hmm. the favela alone. But if we were with other people who lived in the area or from the neighborhood, that it would be okay or different. And so I think, you know, like anywhere, if you're with the families or the people from that community. It's a lot different if you're visiting a neighborhood rather than assuming to be a tourist. So there was a night when we were able to go to see music from the community, and it was very beautiful. We got to see a samba band, and I think that was one of the highlights for me. I mean, like, aside from watching the great movements and leaders, but the samba band was uplifting and the music was wonderful. So, and that's people from the community, mm-hmm. and they're just like you and me. So,
right.
Mm-hmm.
So, one more question. What about the food? We always ask this. What about the food? What did you eat? What was it like?
Beans and rice, and for dinner and lunch, and meat and salad, basically. Coffee, great coffee. And it was simple but good food. Yeah.
Yeah, they pride themselves in sharing homegrown and homemade. And
yeah, everything was
great.
Homemade. And we stayed in the mission, so the food was prepared for us and by the staff there. And so we weren't going out a lot to dinner and stuff. So we pretty much ate there every day.
Well, we're really excited to have you back. We missed you while you were gone. And it's never, while you're there, it's never long enough. But I know it's always good to get back too.
Yeah, and I'm thankful for the opportunity to go and learn. So, and I'm happy to come back and share. And there's so much more, but, you know, we'll talk more about it later.
So I just want to mention to the, to the radio audience right now, Edgar Franks, I think I mentioned, is in South Africa. Michelle just got back from Brazil. Ernesto, who is joining our team, will be leaving for Cuba later this month, or early November. I think he'll be leaving for Cuba on an agroecology tour there. So we've got, hopefully we're trying to plan a report back to the community of what we've all learned and what we're going to do with it to our supporters and our volunteers about what we've learned. Again, I think it's really important that we understand that we're not alone,
mm-hmm.
and for our community to understand that we're not living in a bubble, that we are part of a larger world,
mm-hmm.
and is why we fight so hard. And we debate with our elected officials and politicians and everybody about why we're doing what we're doing. And I think that we are, in terms of climate justice and the Climate Justice Alliance, we're losing time. I mean, the Earth is saying very clearly to us how much damage we're causing.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no question that it's the corporations looking to extract all of the possible profit mm-hmm. from Mother Earth. So we're really renewed, I guess, to have you back and looking forward to your learnings and continuing to support you in your work with Redline Salish Sea, Michelle.
Thanks. Hi, this is Michelle Vindiola. I'm part of the Community to Community Development, and I'm also an organizer in the Redline Salish Sea. And I wanted to share with you my opinion of the guilty verdict that was handed down yesterday to the Whatcom Three. And if you don't know what the Whatcom Three is, they're three brave people who stood up against Trump coming to Whatcom County last May. And Trump came to Whatcom County and out at Linden. And just a few people stood up to allowing him coming to our homeland. These young people were three of them who did so, and they blocked the Guide Meridian to not allow Trump to get to Linden and also other people who were supporting Trump. So they did this as a civil disobedient action and have all the right to do so. But yesterday, the judge and jury found them guilty of disorderly conduct. And not only that, the prosecutor wanted them to serve 90 days in jail. And I feel like this is a ridiculous action on the part of Whatcom County and the court system here. We're living in the Deep North, and we're calling this area the Deep North, opposite, you know, this area of the country, similar to the Deep South, because we have to put up with so much systematic racism, systematic oppression of people of color and those standing up against hate. So, for example, they weren't allowed to bring in the fact that they were using their First Amendment rights for this reason. They weren't allowed to bring in the defense that they were standing up and doing civil unrest or
disobedience.
Yeah, civil disobedience. So they weren't allowed to bring that forward. They weren't even allowed to talk about that, or the judge wasn't allowed for the jury to hear that argument. This is silencing. This is silencing to the fact that we have something going on in this country. I feel it's unfair. I feel like it's setting some kind of a atmosphere for people to be fearful to do anything against this administration. It's setting an atmosphere for any kind of future actions against any kind of politicians in this country, especially against Trump or anyone who feels they want to speak out against systems of oppression. And then that brings me to current issues that are happening. In the future, we're sure to see the prosecution or persecution of the current witch hunt of those involved in the I-5 protest, witch hunt by the prosecutor, Bellingham, Whatcom County prosecutor, the Bellingham Police Force, the State Patrol, all trying to find someone who they can blame. And again, that protest was done for civil disobedience, for the right to speak out against Trump's policies, and setting precedents for that, they're trying to go in and look at the Facebook account of the Redline Salish Sea. There were 3 warrants served on that account, and none of them are actually working right now. The 3rd one was actually passed or approved, but an appeal is being filed, and currently it's held up. So we are working on keeping safe the private information of anyone who has liked or posted or in being involved in the Facebook page of the Redline Salish Sea, and by appealing that verdict or that judgment or decision by the judge here in Whatcom County. Along with that, that particular decision sets a precedent nationwide to allow for law enforcement to go into anyone's Facebook page, any political organization's Facebook page, and look for reasons to find them guilty of any kind of a situation. So this warrant is setting, or if it goes through, they're attempting to criminalize protesters or any kind of person who has a belief against the system that's opposite of the status quo. And it'll set a precedence that allows any law enforcement to go in to a political Facebook page and try to find a reason to quash their types of organizations. So what I'm asking, or what Redline Salish Sea is asking, is for all of you listeners to not fall into that trap. Like I said in our interview with earlier with Rosalinda about Brazil, these movements are happening all over the world, and the attempt to criminalize protesters, those who stand up against corporations. We can't be silenced. We have to be brave. We have to hold to our principles, because that's the only way we're going to make change. So I encourage all of you to stay strong, keep on moving toward justice and what's best for all of us as human beings. And we encourage you to stay involved and organized and part of the Facebook page and in your own movements too, whatever they are. So thank you.
So that was our show, folks. I hope you took down notes. It's a lot of good information. There's a lot of work being done. I wanted to remind everybody that Community to Community has vigils every Monday from 11:30 to 1 p.m. in front of, everybody meets in front of City Hall at 11:30. We try to get enough folks to stand in front of the Whatcom County Courthouse, City Hall, the Bellingham Police Department, the Sheriff's Office, and the Whatcom County Jail, and also the prosecutor, because we think that that whole block there of authority and power that the county and the city has needs to be reminded all the time what they're really there for, which is for justice, equity, fairness for everybody, and living up to the Constitution of this country, which we believe they are not doing. So we stand in front of all of these places trying to stop racial profiling, trying to stop the cooperation of local law enforcement with the federal Homeland Security immigration law enforcement, of the prosecutor trying to prosecute women of color and people of color that are actually standing up against injustice. So, and many other issues that our communities see is important that law enforcement and our elected officials like the city council and the county council understand, including the most important issue that we're trying to do, which is to pass a real sanctuary ordinance. And I think at every single show, I want to say, and our folks want to say, Bellingham is not a sanctuary city. The ordinance that they passed is an ordinance to protect the Bellingham Police Department against liability for racially profiling people of color and poor people. So please, if you want to know more, if you want to participate, if you want to know who we are and talk to us, show up at 11:30 every Monday in front of the Bellingham City Hall. Meet up with Brenda. She is a coordinator of the vigils, and speak with her, give her your information, and we can gladly, all of us, take the time to explain to you and have you join our movements. Thank you very much for listening, and we are an action-oriented organization, so you're always going to get something to do on the radio. And remember, go to our Facebook pages, Community to Community Development, Red Line Salish Sea, Northwest Detention Resistance, and Familias Unidas por la Justicia to find out everything that's going on the moment that it's happening. We do a lot of live feeds. Thank you very much for listening. Goodbye, and we'll talk to you again soon.